Dateline St. Augustine. On-the-spot coverage of the struggle for civil rights in America's oldest city. This evening, T.F. Connolly, WGBH-FM reporter in St. Augustine, Florida, speaks with Randy Pearson, group manager of the Southern Bell Telephone System, St. Augustine. Here is T.F. Connolly.
Our movements around town are well observed by interested parties. The license of our plain-looking rented car has been carefully noted a number of times. The chief of police has even casually mentioned that he knows not only where we're staying, but had committed our room number to memory, a feat that always takes me a good 2 or 3 days to achieve. Being in an allied branch of the communication business, Randy Pearson, group manager of the local telephone company, is well aware of the scope of our activities in reporting the St. Augustine story. Pearson, college-educated, youthful-looking, and quiet-spoken, stopped by this weekend to explain his feelings.
The first thing I'd like to ask you, Randy, is what do you think the problem is as it stands now in St. Augustine?
You mean as pertaining to the race situation?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very candidly, I don't think we have too much of a race problem in St. Augustine, and this might come as a surprise. We're living in a city that has roughly 40%, I would assume, of its citizens are of the Negro race. And probably 95% of this 40% are very satisfied with their living conditions in St. Augustine. And I think probably the 5% of the 40% of our population that participates in disturbances in St. Augustine do so because of outside agitation, outside influences. They react about the same way that a group of students would react at a football game or basketball game. The few that I have talked to, I found that they have no real axe to grind. Lots of them enter into this thing like it's a 4th of July picnic. And
you mean the outside people?
No, the ones...
People who live here.
Who live here.
Mm.
More or less are at the fringe or the edges of these few demonstrations that we've had here in St. Augustine. So frankly, I really don't believe that we have too much of a problem here in St. Augustine. I believe that it is magnified. Now, this is my personal opinion.
One of the concerns, I think, about some of the community here was segregation in terms of schools and living areas. Do you have some comment about that?
Yes, Tom, I think we have some problems. I'm not trying to stick my head in the sand and not see the problems of our community. And we do have some problems in the school. We have problems in both schools. We have problems in Negro schools. We have problems in white schools. We have substandard living conditions in white areas, and we have them in Negro areas. The approach to the problem just seems to be a little different with the two races as far as some people are concerned. Now, my concern is for all citizens, regardless of what the color of their skin is. We have a school, two schools down on Orange Street, an elementary school and a junior high school that is predominantly white. They are definitely substandard compared to the R.J. Murray Negro High School here in town. The R.J. Murray Negro High School is a very modern, up-to-date plant. I don't know how many years old it is, but it's not over 4 or 5 years old. The Orange Street Elementary School was probably built back in the 30s. If I had a child going to the Orange Street Elementary School, I would think that they have a very much of a secondary plan compared to the Negro students that are going to R.J. Murray High School.
If we could turn to another subject, Randy. We talked briefly the other day with someone who was discussing private enterprise and private business, and the feeling was, well, why should an entrepreneur who has the choice allow Negroes at his lunch counter or his restaurant or something of that sort? This seems to be a bone of contention here.
Well, this is a very basic problem, and here again, I don't run my own business, but it seems as though we, somewhere along the line, are losing our view of civil rights. Now, my interpretation of civil rights means that I have some rights, and you have some rights, just as much as our Negro community has rights. Now, if I own my business and operate my own business, I very candidly feel that I should be able to choose with whom I wish to do business. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that I would or would not exclude anyone from my business, but I think that if I, under the capitalistic system, the free enterprise system, as I see it, should allow anyone who invests his money in a business to choose his customers. I believe this very firmly because I believe that in our system, if you wish to take the risk, then certainly you should be allowed to run your business within the tolerances of the law, as the way you see fit. And this, to me, is a civil right or a civil liberty.
Mm-hmm. You told me on the phone the other day that you were a little bit disturbed at some of the publicity that was being given to this movement in the North, the published publicity, and that you felt that there were some very wide discrepancies between the facts and what was being published up there. I wish you'd tell us about that.
This is true. We have had cases, not only in the North, and incidentally, let's not turn this into a war between the states. We have been, in my estimation, drastically misrepresented by newspapers right here within our own state of Florida. Some of our tourist sisters to the south have cut us up pretty badly in their newspapers. We hope that it's merely because they want to get some of our tourists, but we have you have seen the little poop sheet that that I gave you earlier this afternoon. We can just use one case here. I am a member of the Rotary Club here in St. Augustine, and this little sheet that you have in your hand now says that we have furnished 15 dogs to the police department of St. Augustine to help in mob control.
I understand that's not so.
This could not possibly be. It has come to my attention that one of the district governors of Rotary in the New England area has contacted the district governor of our district here in the north end of Florida, and he has it in his possession that the local Rotary Club has furnished 200 dogs to the St. Augustine police force for mob control. Well, this is the type of thing that I'm talking about, and this is the type of thing that the very reason that I wanted to sit down and talk with you to try to dispel some of these inaccuracies. The truth is, the Rotary Club of St. Augustine contributed $100 to the maintenance and upkeep of these dogs.
Mm. But there are dogs.
Oh, yes. Both the city of St. Augustine and the St. John's County Sheriff's Department are using dogs. They're very recent innovation. the way that we obtained these dogs in St. Augustine was the fact that the city commission appropriated the latter part of last year enough money to hire 3 additional patrolmen, 2 whites, 1 Negro. At the time these patrolmen were put on the force, the Negro candidate came to the mayor of the city of St. Augustine and told the mayor that the local NAACP leaders had put so much pressure on him not to come onto the police force of the city of St. Augustine that he felt that his family would be in jeopardy, so therefore he could not take the job. The truth of the fact is that these dogs were purchased by the city of St. Augustine with the money that was appropriated to pay the salary of this Negro patrolman for 1 year.
Ronnie, I have heard some stories about the Ku Klux Klan being down here, and I've heard various versions of the story. Most of them say that they came from somewhere else. I wonder if you would care to commit yourself and describe what has happened in this case.
Yes, we have had one or two Klan meetings, and here again, I am not an expert in this field. I don't know too much about the KKK. But the way I understand it was the Klan from Duval County, which is the county to the north of us in Jacksonville, came to St. John's County to have a meeting, a rally, to try to counteract some of the NAACP activities that were being conducted in St. John's County and St. Augustine last year. And I understand, I didn't see them, I wouldn't participate in a Klan rally, but as I understand it, they did have 2 or 3 rallies down south of our city last year. But it's my understanding that the majority of these people and the officers in the Klan are from Duval County.
How do the people of St. Augustine feel about this northern movement that has suddenly arrived here and intends to be here for another week?
Well, Tom, speaking personally, of course, it concerns me the fact that, and I think it's the intent of the people that came down here is what concerns me. It's not the fact that they came so much. After all, they're going to be here for 2 weeks, and they're going back to New England. So it's not a permanent situation, but I think it's the intent with which they came to St. Augustine. The intent is very well published in their recruiting folder that they distributed through the Ivy League colleges in the New England states. You can read their intent right there. Their intent is to come down here and create trouble, create problems. I was born and raised in the state of Florida. I guess I'm one of the few around who's a native Floridian. I was born to a family that's been in the South for several generations, and I guess you might say that if there is such a thing, you're interviewing a true Southern gentleman at the present time. As far as my raising, my upbringing, as we call it down here, is concerned, I feel very strongly about segregation. I guess you would call me a true segregationist if there is such an animal. But I think you should know some of our philosophy, the way that
I'd be very interested in hearing this.
The way people like myself have been raised. I come from a community that had, back when I was a child, about 60% Negro population and about 40% white. We didn't even have odds of 50-50. Consequently, it's difficult for someone who has not lived in an area such as this to realize that this in itself puts you on the defensive, because you see, I have been the minority. Back in those days, back in the late 20s, we very firmly believed that the railroad tracks in my city was a dividing line. And we stayed on one side of the railroad tracks, and our colored friends stayed on the other side of the tracks. Then through the Depression and the war years, we started an evolution as far as our thinking is concerned down here. And we dropped this absolute segregation. And when I say we, remember, I'm speaking of myself as a typical Southerner. We started, I think, a new generation started thinking that, well, maybe this is not correct. That maybe we shouldn't have second-class citizens. Maybe we should do away with this Jim Crow that we were talking about. And we adopted a philosophy of separate facilities, but equal facilities. Now, this is part of the evolution. This is part of the evolution. Let's stay separate, but let's give them equal facilities. Let's give them equal opportunities in the schools, education, churches, equal opportunities, equal facilities. Now, I think many of the fellows like myself that served with Negro enlisted men and Negro officers in World War II, my battalion surgeon in Korea was a Negro medical man. He was a very courageous man. And I think the natural evolution now is rather hard for some people to accept, but I think that most people think that segregation is on the way out. Integration is on the way in, whether we like it or whether we don't like it. I think lots of us feel this way. I feel this way. The only thing that I resent is someone forcing me to accept this faster than I normally would absorb it, or to be the catalyst in this evolution and bring it about a little faster than I believe it normally will come about if it's left to the good people of both races.
Randy, you were saying that there was an evolution here, that there was separate, then there was separate but equal, and that you feel that eventually perhaps there might be something further than that.
Yes, I've seen this in my lifetime, and I'm a young man.
Indeed, yes.
I certainly, frankly, before I die, if I beat the insurance table, which I plan to do, I think that integration is it's a fact. We here in St. Augustine have done many things voluntarily to integrate the races. We have, I believe, it's three schools. Three white schools, previously white schools, that had Negro students.
But isn't this a sort of token?
Well, Tom, I don't know whether it's token or not, but it's a step.
Mm-hmm.
This is the point that I'm trying to make.
It's now, this, a beginning.
That's correct. Now, this was done voluntarily.
Randy, do you think other people around town have the same optimistic outlook that you have of the eventual integration of facilities and one thing or another?
Well, Tom, I think some people in St. Augustine are more optimistic than I am. I think some of my friends are not optimistic at all. I think as far as my view is concerned, it's a rather down the middle of the road view as far as integration is concerned. There are certain aspects of integration that I don't like. I am very frank about it. I don't like.
Would you discuss those?
Well, I'll discuss it in this way, Tom, in that I am never going to associate personally with someone that I don't want to associate with, be he white, be he yellow, or be he black. No one is going to come into my home unless he is invited, and I'm not going to invite him unless I like him.
Well, I think we all feel that way, don't we?
So, as you say, this is not news, but I know that I have many friends in the Negro community in St. Augustine. I have many friends. I value their friendship. I have many friends in the white community. I value their friendship. There are many white people that I will never integrate with as far as this particular thing is concerned. So this is something that doesn't concern me too much. But we get a certain radical element that wants integration today, and frankly, they're not going to get it today. And when you boil it down to the simple fact that they want something that only God can give them, and God didn't give it to them, and that is a white skin.
Now, you talk about the radical Negro movement, and it's been my experience that there is a radical white movement as well. And you say God did not give them a white skin, which I'm sure we all know. I have heard people who say that, well, these are not people. I mean, right here, right on the other side of this wall in front of the motel, I've talked to men who have said, they're not really people. How many people in the community have this kind of radical philosophy?
Tom, and I agree with you, we have radicals in the white race. I have heard the same thing said. But you will never hear me say that because I don't believe this in my heart.
I know you won't. But the question I'm asking is, do a large percent of the people feel this way, or is it
no,
a small element? Or
I believe that the radical element in the white race in the South is in about the same proportion as the radical element in the Negro race in the South.
This would be
the minority. They are strictly the minority.
Which is like your 5%
right.
And so forth.
Right.
But this is the element that's causing the trouble.
Yes, this is correct.
St. Augustine, we know, is a tourist town.
Yes.
To a great extent. I think I was quoted a figure of 60% of the business that comes into St. Augustine comes from tourism. And the demonstrations of the type that are going on would be very detrimental to that business.
Yes, this is correct. This, of course, Tom, you have hit on one of the basic reasons why a little town of a population of 14,500 has been the target of this, what I would call a massive NAACP attack. And if you don't mind, I've already told you I'm affiliated with the Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to get in a plug for St. Augustine here. We are having our quadricentennial year next year, our 400th anniversary. We have asked the federal government to participate in this quadricentennial year, and I believe that something in the neighborhood of $350,000 is being considered as the United States government participation in our quadricentennial program.
Well, this is the second part of the question that I was going to ask, because I understand that the Negro leaders here are asking the federal government and the other governments who have at one time or another ruled St. Augustine as a colony,
mm-hmm.
which includes the Spanish, the English, and I don't know what else. I think there are a couple of others at least,
yes.
All of whom have decided to spend money on this to not consider.
This is correct, and this was the point I was leading up to. This is the reason that the national organization of the NAACP has picked a little town like St. Augustine. We can't compete with big cities like Birmingham, where they are having their problems in Birmingham, and we don't carry that much weight. We're not that newsworthy. The only thing that makes us newsworthy is this quadricentennial, and the fact that we are trying to participate, get these governments to participate in this program. Consequently, this makes St. Augustine a very newsworthy town. The NAACP has not selected a small town of 14,000 population over in the center part of the state where they grow oranges, for instance. They couldn't make the 50th page in a New York newspaper, but where you have the federal government participating in a program and other governments, the fact that the vice president was down here last year to kick off this quadricentennial program, and he of course is now the president of the United States. I think all of this lends newsworthiness to anything that happens in St. Augustine. And believe me, when I say this, if these people can't get publicity through news media such as yourself and the newspapers and the television, they die on the vine. And I wish I could get as much publicity, free publicity, as these people are getting. It would be very beneficial to my business.
Is there any plan afoot to counteract the detrimental publicity that has come to St. Augustine because of this movement?
Tom, not that I know of. The only way that I know to counteract anything detrimental is just what you and I are trying to do right now. And that is just to make sure that both sides of any question are exposed to public consumption. And getting back to a question that you asked earlier in this interview, we have had people from national magazines come to St. Augustine, interview the local NAACP leaders without interviewing anyone else, and write their articles. Now, you're a journalism man, and it doesn't take a PhD in journalism to realize that this is slanted reporting. You can't go to one source of a news story and come out with a well-rounded story. And I hate to say this, but sometimes the truth just doesn't sell newspapers. The truth sometimes doesn't sell magazines. In an effort to sell magazines, they have to get a little sensationalism in their reporting to sell magazines. But this is not correct.
This is T.F. Conley with Ted Mascott in St. Augustine, Florida.
Dateline St. Augustine, on-the-spot coverage of the struggle for civil rights in America's oldest city. This evening, T.F. Conley, WGBH-FM reporter in St. Augustine, Florida, spoke with Randy Pearson, Group Manager, Southern Bell Telephone System, St. Augustine. This program is a special events presentation of WGBH-FM Boston and is produced by T.F. Conley and Ted Mascott in St. Augustine, Florida, and coordinated in Boston by N. Arnold Shaw and Leslie Darren.